All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How are you? Are you okay? I'm just back from Canada. I'm a little tired. I'm always tired when I travel. I tend to take as early a flight as possible out, and then I have a whole day of being exhausted. You don't want to lose that day. You want to get out early so you can get home and have an entire day where you just cannot get your shit together because you're too fucking tired. That's the way to do it. Stay busy. Get up early. Leave on the first flight out and then get home because you have things to do and you barely can keep awake. Great. Look, people, I love going to Canada and I will tell you about it in a second. Let me just tell you this. Today on the show, Rosie Perez is here. She doesn't like LA. I know it's not that she doesn't like LA. She hates to travel, but she was out here. She's here promoting her new series, The Thriller Now and Then on Apple TV Plus. She's also in The Flight Attendant. Season two of that show is streaming now on HBO Max. But you know Rosie Perez. You know her from Do the Right Thing, from White Men Can't Jump. You know her from Fearless. You know her from a million movies and TV shows after the last 30 years. It's Rosie Perez. And it's an amazing conversation. It's one of those conversations that happens here on WTF occasionally that is just, it goes deep. It's heavy, but it's also revealing and exciting. I mean, and emotionally moving. It was like when Rosie and I got done with this conversation, we had to take a few minutes just to sort of like gather ourselves. And there's a lot here, but it is one of those, it's a monumental episode. It was for me, and I know these episodes. This is one of the all-timers in that this is what this show does at its best, is whatever happened between me and Rosie Perez, which you'll hear in a few minutes. I am back from Canada. Oh, before I tell you about that, I do want to mention Fahim Anwar's new special. Fahim Anwar is really one of the funniest guys working today, truly. Smart, funny, he does the work. It's called Fahim Anwar Hat Trick. It's available now on YouTube. He performs a special in all three rooms of the Comedy Store. For those of you who don't know the Comedy Store, the Belly Room, the Original Room, and the Main Room, hence the title Hat Trick, which is what we call that. And I'm telling you, he's one of the funniest guys working currently. So look, I was in Vancouver, which is one of my favorite places, and I know I've talked about this before, but as soon as I get off the plane in Canada, the entire weight and psychic chaos and dark electricity of American culture just dissipates. And it is such a relief to just enter the kind of practical, slightly mundane, grounded culture of Vancouver, Canada. Even pretentious people in Canada lack pretense. It's just, I went out walking. Well, I'll tell you exactly what I did. I got there the night before and I went out with Charlie Demers, the great comic from Canada. We went out and had dinner. He usually opens for me, but Cameron Esposito wanted to do a few minutes. So she got that gig. And I haven't been using an opener, but I wanted to see Cameron. She wanted to do some new stuff. So I was like, okay. But me and Charlie went out to Tojo's, had some sushi, talked about life. It was very good. It was connected. You know, he was sort of in a place, you know, in his life where he was doing some thinking. I've been doing some thinking. We were able to talk some stuff through about where we were in our lives. And that's what you do with friends. And it was lovely. I saw a few people. I went and watched Roy Wood Jr. work on some stuff. I saw Andrew Santino. I didn't watch him. I felt no need. No need to watch Andrew Santino. But we flew out together. And that guy, he's a bad influence. I got to tell you. I haven't smoked a cigar in like 3 years. I've had no nicotine in my body for years. And Santino talked me into it. I went out and bought a few Cubans. And we did it. It was great. Took a nice walk across the Burrard bridge, and I just saw the people of Canada holding hands, out walking, everyone outside. It's beautiful there. It's sad that I'm living a life where not only am I thrilled that I don't have the kind of frenetic, dark electricity of American culture pulsating through my phone into my goddamn face, but there's water. There's water in Vancouver. It rains there all the time. It's lush and green. There's beautiful foliage. There's oceans and mountains and snow-capped hills. Whatever, man. What I'm trying to say is that I'm jealous of rain. I'm living in California, and all I think about is, when is everything going to burn? When is there going to be no water? And it's soon, and I got to figure out where to go. I got to figure out what to do. I'm going to be part of a climate migration at some point. And we've got to start buying property in the Midwest before they close their borders to progressives and Jews. But look, I just loved being in Canada. It's so relaxing. It's just people wearing practical clothes, you know, having a life. It seems well integrated. There doesn't seem to be, I'm not saying, I don't know much about it, but it doesn't, and maybe I'm romanticizing. I know it's not perfect. I know they have their problems, but it's always relaxing, man. So I took that walk, ate some berries. Then I sat down. I mentioned I sat down with Dana Gould and James Adomian. I haven't seen Dana in years, just doing the old comic thing. We're old comics now, talking about the old days. He's so fucking funny, though. And then that night, I did the show at the Vogue, and it was spectacular. I was happy to see everybody. It was a nice sold-out crowd. Cameron Esposito did a great job. Had a great show. And after that, I smoked my third cigar, and I was almost nauseous. And now I'm exhausted, and everything down to my skin smells like cigar. I had to wash it off me. Yeah, so I just loved it. I ate some good stuff, and I did some nice stuff. It's so relieving. But here's the deal. I think you'll find this conversation with Rosie kind of amazing. I know I did, and I don't know what's going to happen when people come in here, and I can't really explain that to you enough. That, you know, when people ask me if I get tired of the show or you know, is it a job or whatever, I never know what's going to happen when someone comes in here. It's a wild card. I only know what I can, like, look around and watch. I can know their work. I can know things about them. But I don't know how the hour is going to unfold ever. And the amount of anxiety and dread and excitement that I feel leading up to it is always just, it's just the, when somebody shows up and it's just, we're one-on-one, some magic happens, man. It just, I just... lose myself in it and listen and stay locked in with whoever I'm talking to here. And it never gets boring, and it never feels like a job, to be honest with you. It's exhausting sometimes. I mean, after a conversation like you'll hear now between me and Rosie Perez, I mean, you know, it was a lot, and it was satisfying and deep and felt human. But, you know, after it's done, it's a lot when you sort of fold in all the other shit, you know, when you let your phone occupy most of your brain and suck your hope out of your face on top of a conversation like this, it gets a little exhausting. So we had to take a minute, Rosie and I, after this conversation. We had to take a minute to gather ourselves and think about what we had just done. As I said earlier, Rosie Perez... her new show, Now and Then, is now streaming on Apple TV Plus. The Flight Attendant is now in season 2. You can watch that, both seasons, on HBO Max. And this is me talking to her. There is, you know, I wouldn't say it's a trigger warning, but we discuss fairly openly, you know, childhood trauma. And it was moving for me and helpful. I don't know. I don't know what to say. This is just what this show does at its best. This is me talking to Rosie Perez. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer. And I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago.
Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF. Yes.
My allergies a bit.
They are? Is it like pollen?
They're pollen, and I have non-allergy allergies.
What is that mean? What are those? Because I'm only asking because I'm trying to figure out if I have them.
Non-allergy allergies are the allergies that are not listed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you don't know what they are. They're just general.
They're general. Like, so they said that I'm most likely allergic to smog, allergic to dust particles that come out of air vents.
And everything.
So everything. So, yeah. So air. So that's what I'm allergic to. Air. Thank you. Okay.
Good.
Got it.
I've never gone to check if I have actual allergies, but something's gone wrong since I've gotten older.
Me too.
Right. You didn't have them when you were a kid?
No.
Yeah. Didn't notice them. And now, like, some days I feel like my face is going to pop off.
Yeah.
Wait, so how long are you in town for? Do you like coming out here?
No. I leave tomorrow morning.
Yeah, how long you been here?
Late last night.
That's it.
Hit it and quit it. That's my style.
What'd you do? Did you do some TV?
No, I came in.
Yeah.
For something that HBO is doing for the flight attendant.
Yeah.
And it's a whole day thing. So after
the junket thing where you just sit and talk to it, answer the same question over and over again?
Over and over and over and over.
And you got to just accept that that's part of the job?
Exactly.
Yeah, I know that feeling. And everyone approaches you like they're the first one asking you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that show, I mean, it's gotten very popular.
Yeah.
And do you like doing it?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah?
Are we started?
Sure.
We've started.
Yeah.
Oh my! So my allergies and sinusitis is going on. Okay. So.
Not if you don't want to.
No, it's fine.
if that's the one thing you don't want anyone to know.
No, I like the show. I like it a lot. I like working because, you know, like when you get older, you just want to work with people that you could work with.
Yeah.
You know,
I barely want to work at all. You got to convince me to work at all, but I don't stop. But like every day, I'm sort of like, why am I? What am I doing?
Right.
Yes. And we're like the same age. I can't.
Yeah.
I some days I'm sort of like, what am I working towards?
Right.
I think it's up to me, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm the one who has to go. Like I'm done.
Yeah.
But then what do you do? I don't know. So, but you like working with her? She seems interesting.
Yeah, she's nice.
Yeah.
She's overly generous.
Oh, that's nice.
Like if we go out, like I go, stop paying for everything. You don't have to pay for everything.
Yeah.
I have my own money, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I said, you should know. You know my paycheck.
Right.
You're the executive producer, you know?
Yeah.
But she's like, Kaylee always wants everybody to have fun, even after we wrap.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, I'm buying drinks. I'm like, we got to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh my God, you're such a character right now. I said, and you're being such your character right now. Who drinks the night before you go to work? We got to be up at 5. We have seen, 35.
Isn't that part
of... we do? Yes, Kaylee. It's just like,
Isn't that part of, that's the character too, right though?
Yeah.
Kind of drunky?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not good with alcohol. I like it.
Yeah.
I could drink a glass or two.
Yeah.
After the second one, I'm chatty patty.
Oh yeah, too much.
I don't shut up. I don't. And then like the.
And you're so quiet usually.
Actually, I am. And the people when they work with me, they think something's wrong, or, you know, are you okay? I go, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, I'm kind of quiet. You are? Yeah.
since when?
Right.
But that, like, so that's, but what about this other thing? Like, I was just watching the Now and Then thing.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one almost did me in.
Yeah?
Yeah, that was like, I haven't had a project like that since Fearless, this movie I did with Peter Weir.
I remember that movie. That was a big movie.
It was a big movie.
Nominated for Oscar.
Yeah.
I mean, I still, like, when I was thinking about talking to you, I mean, that scene where you and Jeff Bridges in the car with the toolbox,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was crazy.
It was crazy.
So this one has a similar effect on you?
This one has a similar effect on me.
How so?
And, And also like Frankie and Johnny in the Claire de Lune, that
the
one
play, yeah.
Because I got so in and so heavy, and I have some issues. So when I get too heavy, it affects me deeply.
Right.
So like after work, it was very difficult to shake it, and I'm usually very good at that. I can shake it, you know. When they say rap, I'm done. I'm back to me.
Yeah.
And I was back to me, but it's just the heaviness and the sorrow. It was just too hard for me every single day.
With Now and Then?
With Now and Then. It's the character, and the executive producer and co-director, Gideon Raff, he did Homeland and everything. He goes, well, it's kind of your fault, too. And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, you developed this character into this.
Right.
Into this realm. She wasn't supposed to be so heavy and dark. And I said, yeah, but I didn't realize how dark and heavy it was going to be.
Right.
And so I had my sister, Carmen, with me. And, you know, the first day she was there in Spain and I came from work, she was like, what happened?
Yeah.
And I go, no, it's just work. And she goes, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And, like, she hugged me and I started crying. She goes, did someone like hurt you? I'll go and fuck them up. And I go, no, it's the job.
It's so New York.
Yeah. So it was really dark character, Flora. And even when I watched it, I just watched the whole series recently. And my husband grabbed his heart. We were laying in bed. He goes, oh my God. He goes, this kind of pains me. It upsets me to see you like this. I said, it's not me, it's the character.
Yeah.
And he goes, right. Oh, my God. And you know, and so it was really heavy.
Well, that's interesting about the way you work. I mean, you always bring yourself to it, right? I mean, you're not learning a Russian accent or anything.
Well, this one, let me say this.
Yeah.
You have to bring an element of who you are to every role, because then it's not, there's no truth there.
No, not authentic.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's different because the character of Flora, she plays a detective. She got into homicide because her brother ended up killing himself because he was wrongly accused of a rape and he got a life sentence from it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so she dedicated herself to fighting the bad guys.
Yeah.
She never addressed her trauma with her brother. She never addressed the fact that she lost both her parents.
Yeah.
And so she just has blinders on and has this blind ambition, just going to catch the bad guys. And these bad guys happen to be entitled pricks. And those are the same type of characters that pinned a crime on her brother.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand injustice happening to me when I was a kid. I get that. And I understand pain and I understand sorrow. I understand all of that. The difference between me and the character Flora is that I don't want to stay there.
Right, right.
I don't want to stay there. I don't want it to be my driving force anymore.
Right.
You know, and she was like that 20 years ago, and then Flora 20 years later, she's still like that.
Right. She lives in it.
She lives in it. And me personally,
yeah.
I can't survive like that.
No, of course not. But did you, because I talk about that sort of the effect of trauma a lot. I just talked to a guy yesterday who has PTSD from Afghanistan, a guy who ran for president and stuff. And I think that, like, most people have some version of PTSD.
Right.
You know, from their life. But did you, but like now, because there's focus on it and there's treatment for it and they can identify it. I mean, how much of your life did you go through not knowing it?
A huge chunk of it. I thought that success was going to solve all of that. I thought that I'm not going to be a statistic. I am going to survive this childhood trauma and abuse, and I'm going to be successful.
Right.
And then when the success came, and I'm still fucked up, I hit a wall.
Yeah.
And
when was that? How far in?
That was probably like when I was about 30.
Uh-huh.
So that's a long time to deal with that.
10, 11 years already.
Yeah. And I thought I was faking the funk. I thought, you know, I had it in the bag.
Yeah.
And I didn't.
Just because you were immersed in your work constantly.
I was immersed in my work constantly, but also I thought I was above it all. Huh. I thought like, oh, I survived. I'm a survivor. I'm above it all.
Right, I'm tough. Like, it's behind me.
It's behind me.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not like the other people that went through what I went through.
Victims.
Yeah, I'm not that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And trying to come to grips that I was that was very, very painful. Was very painful.
I can't imagine. So like, because going back, because I feel like I grew up with you. I feel like, you know, I've seen you my whole life.
Really?
Somewhere. Do you know, you're such a presence, and you're always sort of there, somewhere, working. I mean, I can't, like, do you ever look back and think, like, holy shit, it's been this many years?
Yes. Yes.
Do you still talk to Spike Lee?
Yes.
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He hates that I'm better friends with his wife, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I love Tanya.
Are they together?
Yeah, they're together.
So that's a problem for him.
Yes, yeah. One time we went out to dinner and he started crying. We were in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And me and Tana like chatting back and forth and he's sitting there. Neither of us are speaking to him. And not on purpose, you know. And he starts crying. I said, Spike, what happened? He goes, do you know that tomorrow's going to be the 20th year anniversary of 25th anniversary of Do the Right Thing? I go, oh. And he goes, yeah. And you like Tanya more than me. I don't understand what went wrong. We both started cracking up. We were laughing so hard. He goes, you go to dinner with her and you hang out at George's house with her. You never invite me. I go, I'm sorry. And he goes, why? I go, well, she's more fun.
that makes sense. He doesn't strike me as a particularly fun guy.
He is. It's just that, I hope he's not going to listen. He's intense and he's socially awkward.
Yeah, that's
But he doesn't know it.
Yeah, right. Oh, right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
At
this point, he doesn't know it.
Oh, it's crazy.
He doesn't know it.
Yeah.
You know, and I recognize that.
And he's a great artist and that's always going on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But he's also funny.
Yeah.
He's funny, but he has to be very, very comfortable with you
to
show that side.
Well, that makes sense. You know, because I find him to be a little intimidating. I've met him once and it was just sort of like, wow, he doesn't, you know. But that makes sense that he just has to be comfortable and he's probably a great guy.
That was who I was.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was coming off as intimidating as I was. And I didn't know I was coming off as combative, angry.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that. You know, my best friend Julie told me, people think that you don't like anybody.
Right?
Yeah, and I didn't recognize that's a weapon of defense.
Well, also, like, I have to assume that, you know, there is a way people, like, outside of what you experience, but there is a cultural thing in New York, right? And in, you know, Brooklyn, and there's a toughness to it.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, outside of what you experience personally, there is sort of a, you know, something intimidating, I think, a little bit.
A little bit, but mine was a lot.
You were born in Brooklyn?
I was born in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a product of an affair.
Yeah.
And back in those days, that was, you know, it was scandalous.
Both your parents lived in Brooklyn?
No, my father lived in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And my mother lived in Brooklyn. They're both Puerto Rican.
Right.
They're both married to different people.
Oh, and then, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
My father was going to cheat, not with my mother, but with her sister.
Yeah.
my mother saw him out the window and said, I'm going to go take out the trash. And she cut him off and said, and he goes, oh my God, you're such a beautiful woman. Would you like to have a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
So he forgot about her sister.
Yeah.
And they went and had a cup of coffee. And then I popped out 9 months later.
That's quite a cup of coffee. That's
good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
how'd you find that out? How'd you find the story out?
I found that out, not the whole entire story. I found out the whole entire story when I was 9. But I found that out like when I was around 4. And because my mother gave me away a week old to my father's sister, my biological father's sister.
So that was sort of like, we got to hide this kid or what?
I still don't know why my mother did that.
So it was your biological father, the guy she had an affair with.
Right.
His sister took you.
Right. And
so you thought that was your mother?
I thought she was my mother. I called her mommy.
Yeah.
And then I remember this vividly. There was, maybe I was 3. I don't know, 3 or 4. And there was having one of the gatherings. You know, Puerto Ricans, we have gatherings for no reason.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
parades,
no reason,
gatherings.
Everything, right? Yeah. 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 Someone lighted a match. Oh, yeah. Let's have a party. Yeah. You know, it's like that. Someone lit a match. He was sitting in the chair and he was drunk. And he kept coming over. He said, come here. Rosita, yeah. Rosita, I'm your daddy.
Really? Yeah.
And I looked at him. And I just started crying and screaming, and the whole party went quiet. And I ran to my aunt, who I thought it was my mother.
Yeah.
And I screamed out, he said he's my daddy.
Yeah.
And I remember she went, you stupid. And she started hitting him over the head. And he started crying. Never forgot that moment.
Wow.
And so.
And you're 3? And, yeah. How are you going to forget that?
Yeah. And she kept telling me, oh, he's drunk, he's a liar, this and this and that. But something in me knew there was a truth to that, but I was too young to understand that.
Because you didn't have another father figure, right? Or did your mom? Right.
And so my mother comes back, you know, when I'm 4, rips me away from my aunt.
Why?
We still don't know. And she put me in a convent.
Ugh.
A Catholic,
like an orphanage?
Yeah, but it wasn't technically an orphanage. It was a home for children.
Right, okay.
And that meant there were orphanages.
Yeah.
And then they were home for children.
Yeah.
And home for children were for displaced, unwanted, abandoned.
Yeah.
And only a few orphan children were there.
Yeah.
And so there, like on Sundays, you would have family day.
Yeah.
And I used to wait.
Nothing.
For my mother. She would never show up.
Oh my God. So
she would show up once in a while. And let me take that back because that's not fair to
her.
She would show up once in a while, but there were times where we would wait the whole day. And she just wouldn't show up. And what was messed up is those were the days where my aunt could have came to visit, but she blocked my aunt from coming to visit me. But all the other days, my aunt would come to visit me, or she would take me on the weekends back down to Brooklyn to be with her. And then I would have to go back to the nuns. So it was like that. And then when I was 9 years old, the nuns called me in, Mother Superior called me in, and told me, you have a father. I go, you mean the priest?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got whacked with the rulers for that joke.
Yeah.
She didn't like it. And said, no, your father is here. And he has, he has rights and there were courts. And like, I'm 9.
Yeah.
You're telling me this at 9?
But this was the guy who your uncle, who you thought was your uncle.
Right.
Right.
And then I walk out and he's sitting there.
And you know him.
And I know him, and I just sat there, and I said nothing the whole visit. He kept trying to talk the whole visit, and I said nothing. And then he took me down to this restaurant. It was called Sorrento's. I remember it.
Yeah.
Down the hill from the convent. And
in Brooklyn?
No, this was in Peekskill. And New York. And and I remember he held my arm, and I yanked it. I didn't know he was being a gentleman.
Right.
And... He ordered me all this food, and I said, may I be excused to go to the bathroom, please? You know, because being in a convent, you had manners.
Sure,
or
sure.
You got the shit beat out of you.
Yeah.
And he said, of course, I'll walk you to the bathroom. I said, that's okay, sir. And he goes, no, I'm your daddy. And I went, okay. And I went to the bathroom, and I climbed out the window and went back up to the convent. I left that poor man sitting there.
So sad.
Yeah, it was so sad. And he was in a panic, they said. And I got in trouble.
You?
He thought he lost me. And you know, and I got a beating for that. I was put on punishment where I didn't have, I couldn't have supper for 3 days.
They wouldn't feed you?
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's not punishment. That's wrong, it seems.
That's how they were.
Oh. So what about your mother? She just had mental problems?
She was a diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic, and they told me that, like, in my tween years. Like, why are you telling the kid here? Like, you're a product of an affair. Your uncle is your father, you know, and then oh, and by the way, your mother's a paranoid schizophrenic. You know, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I don't have any adult issues. No, I'm fine.
It's crazy.
How
did that, but like, so this happens when you're 9 with your father. So how does the rest of it unfold, the relationship? Is she, like, does she have a place to live, your mother and stuff?
Yeah, she went back to her husband.
Oh, so she's a functioning paranoid schizophrenic.
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
How many siblings do you have?
On her side,
yeah.
There were 9.
She had 9 other kids?
Catholic.
Oh, well, Catholic. Okay.
Yeah, they don't believe in abortion.
They just keep having kids. So how does this level off family-wise? I mean, when do you accept what is, you know, in terms of, like, now you know all the information, or at least you know who your father is. How does that get easier, or do you accept it?
I don't know. That's a good question. Shit, my psychiatrist didn't even ask me that. who are you? My God. I think it wasn't a conscious exception. It just, it is what it is.
Sure.
And it was that. And I guess I didn't accept it fully because I used to lie in school.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, about where you come from,
where I came from, and so, I made up this whole story.
You had shame about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I remember the day this one kid in school, she totally busted me and told everyone at school
about your real life.
My real life.
Because, like, she knew. Yeah.
She's one of the kids from the Catholic home.
Oh, yeah.
Because I used to say, oh, my father, he's going to bring a chauffeur to bring me back down to New York City. You know, like, chauffeur was the Metro line, you know, when I went by myself.
And that's when he started acting.
Yeah. Oh, I've been acting from out the gate, you know, ever since that time where I'm your daddy. That was it.
Yeah, that was it?
That was it.
Time to act.
Yeah, so it was intense. I guess I didn't really accept it till I started therapy 17 years ago.
Okay.
I started to accept it.
Oh, so you know, you're older when you start that stuff. It's like, it's really weird when you realize, like, you know, life is only so long, and, you know, you're living in some sort of discomfort that you can't identify. And then, you know, when somebody, you finally willing to try to sort it out, you understand why.
Yeah.
You know, wow. But do you go as a teenager and stuff? Do you have a relationship with the real father and with your mother? And
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't really have a relationship with my mother. She would have court-appointed visits to her. And at first, I was, like, kind of infatuated with her.
Yeah.
And I wanted her to like me and love me and stuff. But I looked just like the man that, you know, she had an affair with him, you know.
Right.
So she didn't like me too much because of that. And always
and also
told
she's
me
mentally ill.
Tell me I was ugly like my father. You're short like your father. I'm like, lady, I'm taller than you. You know?
Yeah. Does she have other problems? She have drug problems too?
No.
Oh. Just mental issues.
Yeah, mental issues. Yeah. Alcohol.
Okay.
Alcohol. It just sucked. To be honest, it just sucked. And if it wasn't for my aunt and my father, I think I would be a nut job, really, to be honest.
With your real father, if it wasn't
my
for him.
Father, God rest his soul, I have to give that man so much credit because he told me this too.
Yeah.
He spent his entire life making it up to me. And we had it out one time, and I felt so bad. And I can't go there. That makes me too upset. But yeah, anyway, we had it out one time.
Yeah.
And anyway. Yeah. And he.
And from there on, he stepped up.
No, he stepped up from the day he said, "I'm your daddy."
Yeah, yeah.
He went to court and kept
when you were three.
Fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, for me, and that's where he got rights.
Yeah.
And kept asking me to change my last name to his, which is Serrano.
Yeah.
And I said no.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because I didn't want to admit, I didn't understand it. But as a kid, I didn't want to admit my mother gave me away. I didn't want to admit she didn't want me. I didn't want to admit that I was a product of an affair. If I changed my name, then that made it all true.
Right.
You know.
Yes.
And I could have saved myself a lot of heartache if I had done that. But I didn't understand as a kid.
It was right.
Just too much.
Yeah.
And you know, and I remember the day my father told me, "You don't have to, but please forgive me."
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it broke something in me that needed to be broken. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. How old were you?
I was 20.
Wow.
I was 20 years old.
Yeah.
And you know, we cried and we hugged and everything. And that's when I realized, my God, this man has been fighting for me since I was 3 years old. I didn't get it. He's been trying to make up for his mistake ever since then. And I remember there was something he told me, too, in that conversation. He said, "Rosita, please, be careful what you do in your youth because you will pay for it when you're old."
Huh.
And I was like, wow. You know, like, that's heavy.
Yeah, given that you were you were a product of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he was there for you.
He was there for me.
Whether you knew it or not. And then I guess eventually you did know it, actually.
Yes.
That's amazing. So, like, so you had all these, I imagine all the insanity was the, like, because, like, did your, am I wrong? Did your mom spend time in prison?
Yes.
She did.
She did.
Yeah.
I don't want to say because my half brothers and sisters will get upset, but she spent some time in prison. She went to prison twice.
I mean, I have to assume that all the complicated trauma that you had to process was the abandonment, you know, love issue, everything, right? I mean, there's no, that must have been overwhelming.
It was overwhelming. It's still overwhelming. It's just not a tsunami.
Sure.
You
right,
know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My psychiatrist told me something so great. She says, "When I met you, you were treading water in the Atlantic Ocean."
Yeah.
And then you went into, like, the river and then to a lake and into a pond. And now you've built a bridge and the puddle is there.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, "When is the puddle going to evaporate?" And she goes, "Never." And I go, "Why am I paying you?"
If I got to live in a puddle.
Yeah. And she says, "Well, a puddle's a lot better than an ocean."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's still there. It's just not as palpable.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, when did you start dancing and stuff?
I was born dancing.
Yeah.
I was dancing for, my aunt told me that I used to dance in the crib all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I would suck my thumb when I got tired, but still hold on to the crib rail and rock back and forth to the music. And my cousins would come home from school and she said it was like I had a time clock in my body. And I would pop up at the time where they were supposed to come home and just scream until they walked in the door. And that meant that they had to play one of my favorite records. I was one. She told me this is who I was when I was one. And I'm a soul man.
Yeah.
And Kool Jerk, they said, were my favorite two records.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would dance with them until I literally passed out. And then the nuns taught me how to tap.
Really?
They taught me how to tap. They taught me how to tap and how to play baseball.
So that's good. I'm glad the nuns did good things.
Yeah. They did a lot of bad things too.
Yeah.
But
another whole other layer of the trauma then. It was just the nuns.
Yeah, the nuns. They were sadistic. Not all of them, but majority of them. They were sadistic. I mean, the beatings were brutal. And, you know, and it got to the point where I remember Sister Bernarda, she used to beat the shit out of me. And one day she slapped me across the face. That was her favorite thing, to slap me across the face. She would grab me by my shirt, lift me up, and smack me across the face.
Oh, my God.
And one day I just slapped her back.
Yeah?
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. Man, did I get it. I got it so bad that I remember I was laying in bed for 2 days in the girls' dormitory at the convent. And they had to send me to the infirmary because then they started getting scared because she didn't report it.
Yeah.
And then they were like, wait a minute, something is wrong. That's how bad she beat me.
Oh, my God.
And when I came back from the infirmary, you know, you would think that she would apologize. She's supposed to be a Christian.
Right.
You know, I came back and she says, you better watch your step, Missy, or it'll happen again.
Wow.
And I was just like, I hate you.
It's like, it's like being in, it's like torture, being fucking prison or something.
It was like prison. I always said, that's funny you say that, because I always tell people it was like I was doing time.
Yeah.
You know, and.
For what? For just being a kid.
For being a kid. I remember one time she beat this girl so bad with the paddle on her, because they love to lift up your dress and pull your panties down and put you over your knee and then spank the shit out of you with a paddle. And she beat her so bad, this little girl.
Yeah.
I'm still friends with this girl, by the way.
Really?
And then she made her kneel down in front of the wall and pray to God for forgiveness. And I remember, I have this vivid memory of her bobby socks just slowly getting drenched with blood.
Oh, my God.
Because she was like, she had sat down on the back of her.
Yeah.
Feet, you know, kneeling, but she couldn't kneel any stand up straight kneeling, so she just kind of slumped down. And I remember that image, like, oh my gosh, and like everybody was like terrified of this nun.
Why wouldn't they be? Yeah. I mean, how's that woman doing?
She's dead.
Oh, you were friends, not the nun, the woman that you're friends with.
Oh, the one I'm friends
that
with.
That got hit.
She's doing the best she can. She has the shakes, what we call the shakes.
Mm.
Nervous, like, shakes and stuff. Yeah. She's married to a wonderful man.
That's good.
And, you know, she has children and she has a great career.
Yeah.
But she still carries the trauma because she never got professional help for it. And you know, and she's such a sweet woman.
Yeah.
And but we're still very, very close. We call each other sisters.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
But the nun's dead.
The nun's dead.
Do you remember when she died?
No.
You just heard about it?
I went back up to
Peekskill.
To Peekskill because I had written a book which was a disaster because I didn't promote it because I wasn't ready to tell that story, even though I told it. I just
before you got treatment and stuff?
No, I was getting treatment.
Right.
But I just wasn't ready. And I remember my psychiatrist goes, I don't think you're ready to write this book.
Yeah.
And I go, I'm ready. I'm good now.
Yeah.
And she was right. And so when all the promo, I just didn't do well and I buried it and I didn't show up for a lot of the promotional events. I just, it was really bad. And like people always say, like, you should write a book. I go, I did.
Do you still feel that way about the book or was it just promoting it that was the problem? Do you like the book?
I like the book. I think it's a little pedestrian in my writing. That's what bothers me more than anything.
Not the information.
Or
the story.
You know, I just recently started really talking about the story in depth.
Right.
And it's still hard for me. Like, even when I'm talking to you, I can't look you in the eye sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
Because you're going... It's sad, yeah.
Yeah, it's sad. It's still hard, you know. But, you know... Anyway, I had to go back up there because the
publisher?
The publisher said we need some pictures.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went...
Oh, of the convent?
Of the convent.
Oh, my... What do you...
And so I went with the photographer. I said, why do I have to go with the photographer? And my sister went with me, and my niece went with me, and they started crying. I go, really? Yeah. Really, guys? My sister called me. Ugh. I was like, why am I taking care of you right now?
Yeah.
You know, and we went in there, and there were nuns that were still alive.
Oh, my
That
God.
I knew. And there was this one nun, sister.
And you're a big star at this point, so they know you, right?
No, they had no idea who I was.
Oh, my God.
They were like, Sister, I go, Sister Antoinette.
Yeah.
And she goes, yes? And I go, it's Rosie. Rosa Marie. And she went, and she hugged me. And I was like, I froze because like a nun hugging. Yeah, oh, my God. Right. Yeah. And she goes, I go, do you remember me? And she said, yes, I used to give you sandwiches because Sister Bernarda would punish you with no food.
Right.
And I go, yes, that's why I'm a greedy pig now. And she laughed. And then another nun comes over and goes, Sister Antoinette. And then she goes, yes. She goes, go to your room. She goes, she has dementia. She doesn't know what she's talking about. I go, no, she remembers me, sister.
Yeah.
She goes, no, she doesn't. I go, yes, she does. And she remembers that Sister Bernarda was horrible to me and withheld food from a child as punishment. And the nun goes, you need to leave.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
No.
I'm a grown-ass woman.
Wow.
And the nuns are kicking me out.
Did you leave?
No. I said, well, I need to go to the bathroom first.
Yeah.
You know, still like that,
you
know, that child, that rebellious
impetuous
child. Yes. And I went to the bathroom, and my friend Eric Johnson, the photographer, he was fascinated by this all, right?
Yeah.
He kept it light. He didn't mean to, but he was like, oh, my God, this is so juicy.
Yeah.
And he's snapping away and everything. Yeah. And I went to the bathroom. They leave. There's no security there.
Yeah.
When they leave, I tell him, come on, come on, so I could show you where the girls slept.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a good thing.
No.
Because when I went in there
in
the dormitory and I saw the bathroom, I got a panic attack and I couldn't breathe.
Really?
And he goes, are you all right? And I couldn't even talk.
Wow.
And I remember pushing him away and I said, I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
And I was leaving and the nuns go, excuse me, you have to sign out. And I go, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And she came from behind the desk waving her finger at me. And I just started to freak out because part of my PTSD, I have flashes of what I want to do. I know that sounds weird, but I have flashes of what I want to do, and I have to, I've learned that to control it. Because what I wanted to do was take her finger and break it.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember so many times fingers being pointed at me.
Yeah.
And so my sister Carmen goes, Rose, let's get out of here. And she goes, it's okay. And she grabbed my hand. And she said, you're not here anymore. You're with family. Let's go. And she goes, go to the car. And I went to the car, and I looked back, and my sister, my hero, my sister Carmen, is cursing all the nuns out. And then when she gets back to the car, I go, you know, because I'm, you know, and I still have that in me, you know. I was like, you can't curse a nun out. She goes, I could do whatever the fuck I want. Like, fuck them. And
wow.
I was like, and it was weird because I couldn't take that in at the time.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, it took us like halfway down, you know, Route 9 that I turned around and I looked at her, I went, you're my hero.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you cursed out a nun. I couldn't believe it. You know, in fairness, there were some nuns that were very nice to me.
Yeah.
Like Sister Antoinette, Sister Anne, Sister Margaret Francis. You know, those three were so kind and so wonderful. And they never tried to squash my spirit.
Yeah.
You know,
it was
they
just
really,
a one?
It was,
two,
no.
One or two? Yeah.
Four. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
when did you find out that one died, though?
When I went there. When they told me she had died.
Yeah. Did you smile?
I said, thank God. Oh, my God. That wasn't good. That wasn't good. Yeah.
What happened?
It was. That's when the nuns started to come out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And surround Sister Antoinette. Yeah.
Well, they must, I mean, like, just like the you know, the sort of pedophilia thing with the Catholic Church, I mean, they must have to deal with people coming back traumatized, wanting some vengeance or some accountability.
Here's the funny thing. They used to have an annual reunion of the children that were in the home.
Hmm.
And I remember some of the kids would say, oh, you're ashamed of your past. You don't want to go there. And I go, I might be ashamed of my past, but I don't want to go there. Not for that reason. I don't want to go there because I don't want to go back to the scene of the crime.
Right.
There were crimes committed there.
Right.
I don't want to go there. I don't understand why you want to keep going back. You guys are acting like domestic violence victims.
Right. Like you Stockholm syndrome.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, oh, well, they did so good for us. No, no, no. Because they gave us a roof over our head and gave us food when it wasn't withheld as an act of punishment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
They
Terrible.
Beat the crap out of us.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They confined us and restricted us in so many things, and they put stuff in our head that we're all spending years trying to, like, deprogram ourselves.
Yeah.
I said, I don't understand. And they would go up there and show pictures on the
Crazy.
Facebook, and I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's how the trauma keeps happening. That's
right.
What, yeah.
And that was my assholeness.
Yeah.
Because that was part of me thinking I was above it,
right.
That I was better than them. That I had survived because I was quote unquote stronger than them.
And you're angry.
Yeah.
Because you identified what it was. So
yeah.
Your anger kind of, you know, made you feel like you were rising above it.
Right. And I wasn't because I was a victim too.
Right.
But I had to come to that understanding, and then I stopped judging them.
Yeah.
And started really finding compassion for them that, my God, they really did damage.
Yeah.
Look, you just can't shake it. You can't walk away.
Yeah.
You have to keep coming back, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But that's like also repressing it. Like obviously they're choosing involuntarily the whatever good memories they've put in there, you
right.
know, like over the truth.
Right.
Right. So they're just kind of sleepwalking almost.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you like in terms of like you were functioning and you were when did you start doing like was all this anger being put like into your work, into your, like, did you, when you were dancing, when you were, like, acting and stuff, like, when does it start to be a job for you?
Well, I was going to college to be a marine biologist. I was studying biochemistry.
Yeah.
And then a series of events, right, like, back to back, happened and changed my life.
When you were, like, 19 or something?
Yeah, and I saw at a club a talent scout from Soul Train asked me to go on Soul Train. That changed things. And then I'm at a nightclub, and I get in an argument with Spike Lee. And then that changed things. Like, the path that I was on that I thought, you know, would lead me to the success I was craving as my salvation.
Yeah.
You know... It just went, you know, it just took a different tone. And
what did you think it was going to be? Marine biology?
Yes. I thought I was going to be a marine biologist. Not in the water because I don't like to get my hair wet.
Yeah.
Because it's too much trouble doing it all over again.
Somewhat,
you know?
Somewhat just from the boat.
Yes, exactly. I would be in the lab portion of it all. That was my thing.
Yeah,
you know, I loved looking down a microscope.
Yeah.
You know, and
so that was really your passion at that point.
Yes.
Where'd that come from?
I almost drowned in Seaside Heights, New Jersey.
Yeah.
One summer, and
yeah.
I kept having these dreams
yeah.
about a whale swallowing me up.
Uh-huh.
That's the Catholic
sure.
stuff, right?
Yeah, the Jonah.
Yeah.
Right.
And stuff, and octopuses
yeah,
coming
yeah.
to get me.
Terrifying.
And stuff, and I didn't realize it, but my psychiatrist goes, do you understand how strong you are? You were like, you thought you were going to get swallowed by a whale or suffocated by an octopus.
Yeah.
So you decided, well, I'm going to be a marine biologist and conquer all that.
Well, that plays into the other trauma too, right? I mean, like that's the mindset. It's like you know, I'm just going to fight it and rise above it.
Exactly.
Huh? So you were going to master the ocean?
Yes.
Yeah. From a boat or
yeah.
a lab, not in the ocean.
Not in the ocean.
I'm still scared of the ocean. I don't. Even,
I'm terrified of the ocean. Isn't that funny?
I can't even be in a pool. I can't see the bottom. It's like, or a pool at night. Even, like, I know there's no sharks in there, but it's still creepy.
Yeah.
I don't, just to be in the ocean where you don't know what's under you, I can't take it.
Yeah.
So, well, it just sounds like, so you're just out dancing in clubs and you get found?
Yeah.
And then you know, it's a whole new thing. But it seems like it's probably more fitting, obviously, to do this other thing. It's better.
It's better.
Yeah.
But it's it's better, and I have no regrets. I love my life. But then at times there, to be honest, gosh, this is the first time I've seen it. There are times where I, like, Rose, walk away because, like projects like Fearless,
yeah,
like, really did a number on me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it scared me how easily I can go that deep. It scared me that I understood the pain.
Right, without having any control over it. Like, you could go there, but you it wasn't a safe place within
It wasn't
you.
A safe place, but like Peter Weir was like, he taught me the concept of technique, right?
He did. He never did any acting training or anything.
Never acting training. And I said, oh, I don't think that take was real. He goes, why? I said, because I was faking it. And he goes, that's your job. And I was like, right. But he goes, no, I don't think you fully get it.
Yeah.
And he said, you're so instinctual in acting and you're good at it. I go, I am? Like, I didn't even realize, you know, and like, I am. He goes, you don't know that? And I was like, and I couldn't answer him because he was right. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And he says, but you, the way you fake it, that's your craft. Don't you get that?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And then what happened, instead of that giving me comfort and confidence, it pained me that I can fake pain.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so depressing.
Really?
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I'm good at it?
Yeah.
That's really depressing. You know, and it just shook me. You know what I mean? And I remember having dreams that I kept dropping a baby because that's what my character was doing. This is after we wrapped.
Yeah.
You know, and I just was like, what is going on with me? You know, and I didn't tell anybody except my sister Carmen.
Yeah.
I didn't tell anybody. And, you know, her response was, that's weird.
Yep. Not a professional therapist.
No. And, you know, same thing with Frankie and Johnny. She played a woman who was shut down because she was a victim of domestic violence.
Yeah.
What people miss out of that play, you know, that's why she just wants to have sex with no feeling in it.
Right, right.
You
right.
know,
yeah.
She doesn't want to get attached.
Yeah.
Completely understood that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, you know, night after night after night after night after night, you know, and I remember telling Joe Montello one day, I go, I'm sick of doing this play.
Yeah.
And he goes, really? You're doing so well. Like, why do people keep telling me that?
Yeah.
And he didn't understand where I was coming from.
Right.
Funny enough, Terrence McNally did.
Oh, yeah?
Terrence McNally blew my mind. I remember one day he was so mad at me for something. And everything, and he just looked at me, and I go, what? And he goes, you get this, don't you? What's going on with you?
Yeah.
And I went, nothing. And he went, oh, Rose. And he hugged me, and I pushed him away. I go, I'm fine. What are you doing? Get off of me. You're weird. You know? And it wasn't until years later that I told him, remember that time? He goes, yeah. And I said, my God, you were right. He goes, I've been waiting for you to come around and say that. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And he said, what, are you in therapy or something? I go, yeah. yeah, so it was, it's hard. And even with Now and Then, right?
The new one, yeah.
The new one, Gideon would always, we were filming in Spain, we were filming in Miami, and Gideon Raff would always look after me and Zeljko Ivanic because we were away and stuff. And one day he goes, are you okay? And I go, I think I'm depressed.
Mm.
And he goes, why? I go, because Flora is depressed.
Yeah.
And he went, okay. And I go, yeah. And he's like, you want to hang out this weekend? I go, okay. And like, he was so wonderful to me because he didn't know anything about my past.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, like holding my hand throughout the process.
Yeah.
And then one day there was a scene where I talk about my brother, my character is talking about the brother killing himself.
Yeah.
And later that day, I just couldn't stop crying. And he goes, what's wrong? And I go, she's getting in me. This can't happen again. And he goes, what? I go, she's getting in me. I come to set, I'm her. Yeah. Elif said, I'm her. And he goes, oh, is that your process, your method? I go, Gideon, you're not listening to me.
Yeah.
And I go, it's scaring me.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, wow. And I said, I need to have my sister here. I need to fly her in.
Yeah.
And I need to call my doctor. And he goes, oh, this is serious. I said, yes, this is serious. And everything. And then he goes, well, you're doing good work. I go, why do people, I'm falling apart over here. You know, it's like,
wow.
And yeah, so this role was, yes, even when I start to talk about it, I get that sorrow in my body.
That's what's, like, you were naturally sort of trying to manage it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when people say, like, you know, you had this reservoir of never-ending pain
mm-hmm.
that you could just sort of tap into. It doesn't seem like you were faking it. It was just you had it in you.
Mm-hmm.
So you could tap into it, you know, it almost as a way to avoid it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it just became overwhelming. And people were thinking that you had some sort of control over it. And you do. But I think the more work you do, well, that's what's interesting about, like, with this, with Now and Then, is that, like, you've done a lot of work,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But still, you know, it's risky.
It's risky. The thing that's different, like, from Fearless, that's how many years ago? Like,
yeah.
93? Was it 93?
Yeah, 93, yeah.
To now, is that I have tools.
Right.
I know to call Carmen.
Yeah.
I know to call my husband, Eric. I know to call my doctor.
Yeah.
You know, now
right.
I can go, okay, and it allows me to breathe and release it.
Yeah.
And understand where it needs to be placed. This is my job.
Yeah.
You know, and the feelings that I have are real. And but they are not. They are real for my job. And I know that sounds simplistic, but when you're in it, it's not that simple.
Well, that's like the pond problem, is that you still have the pond. I mean, they're not going to, you know, overtake you, and you know what's up.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you open the door to those feelings, they can consume you.
Yeah.
So
puddle, please don't. I'm past the pond.
I'm
please.
Sorry, puddle.
puddle.
you've done so much work, but there are these specific ones that really stand out in your mind as risky. Like, because you work all the time.
Yeah.
You've been in 100 movies and all these TV shows, but you don't have this experience all the time.
No.
Right.
No.
Sometimes you can just do the gig. It doesn't require this of you.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I've had jobs where it's never been an issue.
Or maybe fun even?
Yes. Okay. A lot of fun. Yeah. a lot of fun. And, you know, and, but it's good because, you know, even though I had a piece of that sorrow with me after we wrapped Now and Then.
Yeah.
I was able to exhale when I got home because that's part of my work too, is to create a home that I never had. You know, the closest thing I had was at my aunt's house or my father's house, but it still wasn't.
Right.
You know.
Right. You can return back to something and then kind of have, you know, and kind of recover.
Right.
From the work.
Right.
And if you frame it like that, it's not as menacing as, is this ever going to go away?
Exactly. And I also learned that I can't recover by going home and then laying in bed for a couple of days where I thought that would be good for me.
Right.
That doesn't work for me. It could work for other people,
yeah.
but for me, I need to have my day of rest, and then I need to get up.
Yeah.
I need to get up, and I need to go out in the sunshine.
Yeah.
Because part of that is the home, the children's home.
Yeah.
It's like being so insulated.
Yeah.
It's a false
Security. Right.
To be indoors.
Yeah.
Because we were literally indoors and inside a compound.
Yeah.
You know, shut away from
sure.
the real world.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, even when we went to a public school, they had their own school in the convent. And there was certain kids who they felt were gifted enough to integrate into society.
Yeah.
And they called public school, not public school, they would say, Rose, you have been picked for outside school. And then the nuns would say, Oh, did you meet any of the outside kids? Do you have any outside friends?
Oh, so it was really, yeah.
It was like that,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So when I think I, you know, I'm doing well by staying in the house
yeah.
too long, that's when everybody, my family and my husband, yeah. they're like, you need to go outside.
Gotta go, yeah. Go play with the outside kids.
Go. Join the real world, you know?
Yeah.
Don't just stay there.
Yeah, in your head.
Yeah.
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 Wow. So how did you get resolution with your mother?
I don't think that ever really came. I think if there was any type of resolution, she told me I had to forgive her when she was passing. And I go, in my head, I was like, I don't have to forgive you for anything. But what came out of my mouth was, I forgive you.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
And we hugged and she cried and everything. And I'm glad that happened. Most people go, why? You know, because she used to beat the shit out of me, too. And I said, because you got to give people a chance. Like, I want people to give me a chance. Like, I want another chance with people that maybe I was an asshole to, or maybe that I was shut down to,
yeah.
or maybe I was, like, came off as intimidating and I'm actually not. You know what I mean? Yes, I have a temper, this and this and that, but actually I'm a corny person. You know, I'm a nerdy, corny.
Yeah.
Kid and still am, and you know, it's that's why I did it, because it's like
you're doing it for them. In a way, right? I mean, you're offering her the difference if she's on her deathbed between you saying I forgive you and you saying, you know, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Why do you got to send them off like that for?
I mean, right.
you still got to carry the burden of whether or not you really forgive them, but. You let them off the hook at the last minute,
yeah.
which is, I think, charitable.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
I get
like,
it.
And she was mentally ill, you
yeah.
know, like, so how much can I really fault her?
Right.
And it was a different time as well, where
yeah.
the treatment wasn't great,
yeah.
you know, and she was dirt poor.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things, you know, when you grow up, you start to see the reality of the world and your heart opens up, hopefully.
I feel it a little bit, yeah. It's hard.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard.
Because when you come from a certain amount of whatever it is, the sensitivity that comes from abuse, if you open your heart, there's still a fear of being overwhelmed.
Right.
You know, like you're going to lose control.
Yeah.
That, you know, because you don't have any real place to land emotionally. You weren't brought up with it. So like if you open your heart, like, you know, who's going to take care of me? Like, you know,
yeah,
it's weird that stuff, you know, we get old and we're in, our brains are in our old bodies, but like it's still like never changes this core until you kind of get in there, right?
Until you get in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it's, you know, I don't know. I hate when people say to me to like, well, aren't you glad what happened to you because, you know, it made you a stronger person? And my response to those people is, fuck you. You're validating the abuse.
Right.
What do you
mean? Right.
Oh, it's a good thing that I got the shit beat out of me and I was abandoned. And not only, you know, shit beat out of me by the nuns, but also by my birth mother.
Yeah.
And then also abused by my half sibling and I, yeah, great.
Yeah,
let's applaud that.
Yeah.
And thank God that I'm strong now.
That I survived
you
by
know?
Some miracle and
yeah.
you're going to call that strength.
And I said, let's look at it a different way,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Because the reason why Sister Bernarda hated me so much is because I had a strong will. I had a strong spirit. That was in me before her.
Yeah.
That was in me before my mother beat the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Right? So if those things didn't happen, imagine how much stronger I would have been. Imagine how much effective of a person, of a human being I would have been. Because that's still me.
Yeah.
They didn't take that away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They dented it.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I tell people I'm a dented can.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, but the goods are still inside.
Sure. Well, they manifest, they changed it into anger.
Yeah.
For years.
Yeah.
I think is what happened.
Yeah.
And you could have been more loving had you been given the opportunity.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, and it's like I'm stronger in, you know, despite what happened.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
let's start saying that.
Yeah.
You know, instead
yeah.
of the other thing, because it really,
sure.
that gets my goal.
Yeah.
Like, it really gets my goal. And.
Well, it's kind of dismissive. you know, when they're like, well, you should be grateful, you know, you're tough. It's like, you want to know the truth.
Right.
They just want to, you know, say something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or they can't, my experience is that they don't know what to say.
Sure.
Because it's just too much to hear.
Yeah.
And that was another reason why I didn't tell my story.
Yeah.
Not only because I was ashamed of it, you know, that's what people don't understand, the effects of poverty, effects of abuse. It brings so much shame on you. And that's mentally debilitating.
There's no way they can be empathetic with you because they don't understand the true hardship of what you go through. Right.
They can't be empathetic, but also it's just too much for them to bear.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's just too heavy for them.
Yeah.
You know,
I tend to believe that, you know, people can handle things, but you know, they don't want to take the time. And they don't, you know, they don't see it as their sort of responsibility or their side of it to really take it in. And then also, you know, even as somebody who's been through what you've been through, the shame, you may have worked through a lot of stuff, but you don't want to burden somebody.
Right.
Right. So there's that part of it, too. So it's a difficult equation where it's like, you don't get it, and I'm not going to give it to you because, you know, it's not yours to have. But, you know, go fuck yourself for not understanding.
Well, you can look at it that way. But yeah, but it's just hard. It's hard. But on the flip side of it, thank God I got help. Thank God, because, you know, what people, like, I had no idea you went through this. You always seemed so happy. I go, and I was.
Yeah.
That was authentic.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But when I wasn't happy, that was authentic too. It's just that I hid it from you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And now I'm trying to show up as my whole self.
Yeah.
And it's been difficult. Like, even sitting here talking to you about it, it's difficult.
Sure.
But I feel this need to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, to get it out of my system, but also maybe someone listening could get to the place where I'm at quicker than I did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because. Like,
I'll get the help.
Get the help. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, my work got better because I got help.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You have more control over it.
I have more control. I'm keep getting more and more out of my way.
Yeah.
And then I can move forward. And even with the work, like even like I said, like with now and then, I know how to manage it.
Sure.
I know how to manage all of these things. And I hopefully, you know, maybe someone else can get some inspiration or some shit.
Sure.
There has to be a reason why I'm going through this.
Well, but you're also able to show up for yourself as a whole person. You know, you're not hiding. There's something about, you know, the transparency of copping to, you know, your shame and the abuse and all that, because it fills you up. You don't have this other side of you that you keep to yourself because you're ashamed of it or afraid of it or you think people can't handle it.
Right.
You got to walk through life, you know, at least feeling your whole self.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That means something. It's a little more vulnerable and it's uncomfortable, but ultimately when something's taken from you as a kid, you walk in this weird sort of disjointed way, like part of you can't show to anybody. And that part of you is very young and very scared. But once I think you get used to it, it'll integrate. Right?
I hope so. I sure hope so. You know, but
yeah,
you know, it's I don't know. It's still
a process.
A process.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're doing good work.
Oh.
You know, in the right way, in the real way.
Yeah.
So what, how are you feeling about work in general? Are you going to keep doing stuff? Do you have things on the, that you're working on now?
Yeah, we're working on developing certain things and.
For you?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
And for other things.
Yeah.
But I would say that I know deep down in my soul, even though there's moments where like, I have to walk away from this, it's too much, that I can't. That it serves its purpose for me. It's in me. It's the need that I have to express.
Yeah.
I love acting. Yeah. I love it, even though it sometimes it tortures me. I love it because those moments of torture are very small compared to all the other joys that it brings me. And even like when I sat and watched now and then, like yeah. I said, I felt a sorrow, but I felt great that, you know, the entire cast, we made magic.
Yeah.
And that fills my heart up with so much joy
yeah.
and love. And I, you know, I just have to keep doing these until it served its purpose. But I feel like I'm not finished yet.
Well, I think I feel honestly that your best work is ahead of you. In the sense that the more you find out about yourself and the more you have sort of control over your story, how is that not going to make the characters or the roles you take and play so much deeper and sort of more powerful in a way?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I look forward to that possibility. You know, because one thing that I did learn in therapy,
yeah.
like you said, is like, I've been acting all my life.
Right.
It just wasn't on a screen or on a stage.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was necessary for your survival.
It was necessary for my survival, so I can play other people very easily.
Yeah.
You know, in the sense that I can get into character.
Well, now, but now as a professional, you don't have to do it because you're terrified.
Exactly. Yes. 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 Right. Oh, the nuns were the first that put me on stage.
Oh, really?
Yes, I was the lead Easter Bunny in the Easter Bunny Parade. Yes, I was the lead bunny. Yeah, yeah. And then and then the Candyman. That's where they taught me how to tap.
Yeah.
They put me on. They would do these stage productions during the holiday inside the convent. They yeah. had a theater. The Catholic Church had money. Let me tell you.
Oh, sure.
You know.
Yeah.
Even though they starved the shit out of us.
Yeah.
You know, they had money.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're the like Spike Lee's like, you never acted. No. And I wiped it out of my brain.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I started therapy, I went, oh my God, the nuns saw it. It's the fucking nuns. I got to give them the credit. Oh my God. You know, it's like,
the worst. That's the worst moment. I got to give those fucking nuns credit.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Well, but there is something, although we talked about, you know, how it, you know, people can't understand, but there is something about at least acknowledging whatever good was there.
Right.
You know, it doesn't take away from the bad.
No.
But it gives a little balance.
Yeah. I have to be with the good. I have to stay with the good. I have to acknowledge the good or else I'm not going to survive.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to survive because, you know, to me, what it says is that they didn't kill my spirit.
Spirit, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was still able to enjoy life. I had moments of enjoyment. Yeah.
Through it all. Yeah.
Like they just couldn't crush me.
Nobody could.
Yeah. And I, you know, I was on, you know, that stage. I remember the Candyman can't. I remember. I still kind of remember the routine. Don't ask me to do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember being on that stage when I allowed myself to remember, I should say.
Yeah.
How much joy I felt.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Thanks for talking to me.
Oh, my pleasure. Are we done?
Sure.
Oh,
we
my
could,
God.
We could talk more.
No, but I think God, we're... this was torturous. I'm fucking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was really an honor to meet you. Thank you.
Oh, same here. Same here.
Wow. Okay. So take it easy for the rest of the day. What an amazing conversation. I'm telling you to take it easy. Telling me to take it easy. As I said, The Flight Attendant is now in season 2 on HBO Max, and you can watch her new show, Now and Then, now streaming on Apple TV+. You can go to WTFpod.com. I'll be putting up some new dates this week. And this is some, you know, I don't know, I think it's some metal music. I'm not sure why. And I'm sure I've played something very much like it not long ago, but it's a new guitar. It sounds good, and I'm tired. Monkey, LaFonda, cat angels everywhere. Hey folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.